back to thefandom.com, and here is the host of the Chase Masterson Show, Chase Masterson.
Oh my God. Hello, Rob. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to another week of thefandom.com. I'm really excited to be continuing our Enterprise shows this week with a fabulous actor that you guys all know and love, John Billingsley. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. How
is my picture being taken?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
In that camera,
yes,
right there?
Exactly.
I thought it was on you.
It's all you, babe.
Holy cow.
No,
it looks like it's pointing to you.
No, I don't think we're being broadcast simultaneously as we speak.
Oh, okay.
So don't worry about that.
Well, I don't really understand technology. So for all I know, this is just like one of those sting things. None of this is happening, and there aren't any people
out
there.
I asked for a special lens, like a veil.
Oh, okay. Cool. So I brought my checkbook. I know you're going to ask me for $10,000 to somehow get something off the ground, yada, yada.
On the air, yes, we want to have you finance the next Enterprise episode.
Oh!
Would that be all right with you?
1.6? No problem.
Oh, well, I know they've been trying and very valiantly, and I just know that they're excited that you're here and that we've been able to give them a bunch of guys from your show.
Good. Well, happy to be here.
I know. It's winding down. Tomorrow's your last day.
Tomorrow's my last day. One more rubber head left.
What's
left.
What's up? Oh, are we on?
Yeah, you're on. You just need to be closer.
Okay.
You hear me okay?
Yeah, but you have to always face that way now.
Okay, well, I don't know what to do. All right, what if I just hold it?
Him?
No. How embarrassing.
So this is all being broadcast right now? This
yes.
Whole little
Sorry, everyone.
Every part of it.
About where?
Look, he writes the checks, so I'm just doing my job here.
I came in and my hands didn't know what to do. Right.
Get out of here, Scott. John Billingsley, tell us, I want to know much more than just Enterprise, of course, and I'm sure they do too.
I'll hold my little mic thing up to my face.
Tell us
too,
about your life as an actor.
How
did you start as an actor, and then we'll get to the Star Trek stuff later.
Okay, let me pull this little thing off so I can hold it up in front of mine. So now, this is taking
a
picture of both of us holding
it's
our little
quaint,
microphones up this way.
I'm very embarrassed.
This is kind of
That's
cute.
What happens when you wear something with smoke
this
cut.
Is kind of cute. What's my
Yeah.
Excuse?
I don't know.
I just want
well,
to
that's kind of low cut.
I want to make you feel comfortable, that's all.
Thank you.
In the fifth grade, we had moved up to Connecticut, and I had a very thick southern drawl.
Uh-huh.
I moved up from Alabama and Louisiana.
Did you?
And I was sort of a little pariah in the fifth grade. But I was a literate pariah because I was always a big reader, and they made it mandatory in my fifth grade lit class that everybody had to audition for the school show, which was A Christmas Carol. And I was essentially the only fifth grader that could read off the page with any degree of feeling and passion, so I got cast as Scrooge. So for that one brief, shining moment, I actually got to experience what it was like to be popular. And that's what decided me on a life in the theater.
Never before and never since.
Never before and never since, yeah. It was
so
just,
sorry.
It was like a month of, relative happiness
And you were
for
Scrooge.
Me. I was Scrooge.
That's the best it's ever gotten? There?
Pretty much, yeah.
Popular.
Pretty much. I made a little more money down the road, but yeah, in terms of having fans and love and affection and yeah, of course, as soon as the play closed, they just started beating me up again.
Okay, well,
that taught me a lesson too.
Yeah,
it was sort of the microcosm of the business, all in
Get
one.
Get out of here, skinny.
You got a moment in the sun,
uh-huh.
And they kick your ass.
Right.
So
and it's just kind of.
Yeah.
Goes that way up and down ever since.
But I had I had lovely parents who did nothing but encourage me to do whatever the hell I wanted. And so they started giving me acting lessons with a couple who had, Ed and Dorothy Bryce, who had been on The Guiding Light.
Oh, really?
For a number of years.
Okay.
And so I would commute into New York and take their acting class. And I don't know that I ever thought I was going to do it professionally until I went to college.
Uh-huh.
I thought I was going to be a writer. But
really?
Yeah, but it was certainly a passion of mine from an early age.
That's very cool. Where did you go to school?
I went to school in Bennington, at Bennington College.
Okay.
I only applied to the girls' schools. My parents were very dubious about that. Seven Sisters Colleges. It's like, what do you think? I'm going to go to Dartmouth, for God's sake?
Right.
It's like,
that
I needed all the help I could
sense.
Get. I needed the ratio to be just so.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Little did I realize, of course, that most of the girls at Bennington were lesbians. But that's another story.
You should have read the website.
It didn't say anything about that on the website. I actually turned a lot of the girls into lesbians. That was really...
Oh.
That was even more traumatic.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no. In the middle of an affair I was having, suddenly she said, I got to tell you, I'm a lesbian.
Gosh.
Bummer.
Was it scarring?
A little bit scarring.
I still
remember her name, but I don't want to broadcast it for fear that, Robin Gustafson might be hearing this.
Oh, no. I would never tell Robin Gustafson.
Yeah. I probably should have done that,
I'm
should
so
I?
I'm so sorry. No. But we're building our
odds?
Audience, John. What are the odds?
What are the odds?
I'll look her up later. So you studied acting in college?
I did. It was a very small liberal arts college, and I initially went there because I wanted to write. And they had some wonderful writing teachers, Bernard Malamud, who I think was one of the 20th century's great writers, George Garrett, Stephen Sandy. But it was a little bit like being thrown into an acting class with Laurence Olivier before you're old enough to be able to appreciate it. I was in awe of these guys, and I kind of stepped away thinking, there ain't no way in God's green earth I can write like them. I don't have the discipline. I don't have the craft. I'll never get it. On the other hand, rehearsal, hey, what's that? You go, you play, you all go out and have a beer afterwards. That's much less intimidating to me. So that's how I became an acting major.
That's so
great. Not that I hadn't done it before in school and studied it as a kid, but it was in college that I decided that I might actually consider it as a career choice.
Because it's fun, and you can go have a beer
it's
after.
It's fun, you can go out and have a beer, right. And I had no other skills. I had no other skills at all, and that helped a lot.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, my parents were very concerned, too. They were very insistent I have a backup plan.
It's a good thing it's going well, I guess.
Well, you know, David Mamet says, if you have a backup plan, if you have a fallback plan, you will fall back on it.
Mm.
So I assiduously cultivated not having a backup plan.
Yeah, I've sort of lived my life that way.
Yeah. And by God, you know, it's like, if I fall backwards, I'm just going to break my butt, so I won't fall.
Yeah, I guess it's worth to live by.
Yeah.
So you have a strong list of credits, you know, far before Star Trek.
I don't know if there's a strong list of credits, but...
Come on, you were Timmy the Geek in X-Files.
I was Timmy the Geek in X-Files.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
Yeah, I played a lot of psychopaths and killers. And,
okay, Touched by an Angel.
He wasn't a psychopath.
Okay,
but he was kind of a jerk.
Gilmore Girls, Family Law, Judging Amy.
Tight ass.
You get a lot of that tight ass?
Tight ass is jerk, psycho killers. Actually, Dr. Phlox is the most compassionate and sagest guy I've ever played.
And what?
Sage. He's sage. He's sage. Sagest. That's not really a word, is it?
I don't know.
Most sage.
Maybe it's just new to me.
He's the most sage guy.
I think sagest, yeah, now that you mention it. Yeah, okay. So, let's talk about Dr. Phlox. Tell me about your audition. I don't mean to be predictable, guys, but these are the questions you guys want to know, and I think it's a great place to start.
It was the end of that particular pilot season. And I had actually been up for Alias, the part of Marshall on Alias. For those of you who watch Alias, he's the techno nerd on Alias. And in pilot land, if they're interested in you, they basically kind of put a clamp on you. Once they say they're interested, it effectively means you're not going to be able to get out for much else.
Right.
So I was waiting for them to bring me into network, and a month goes by. That's the least important character on the show. And finally they called and they said, we found somebody else.
Oh,
see you later.
God.
And I thought that was it. The next day, Enterprise calls. I go in the day after that, and the next day they call and they say, essentially, you're our only choice. And it's kind of pro forma, in effect, is what they implied. And I went to network and got it. The only interesting part of that story would probably be that when I first auditioned, there wasn't a lot to go on, and it said, come in with a slight alien accent. Which I thought,
a slight alien accent.
So I practiced with my wife all sorts of funny voices, and she just went, no.
What was the first alien accent you came in with?
I don't really know.
No, please.
I couldn't tell you. I'll tell you one I did decide to go in with, which was I thought that perhaps on his home planet he was a bird. Or he had sort of avian-like tendencies. So
In fact, John, I squawked. You squawked. We've heard this story last week, actually, Dominic.
Oh, Dominic comes in and tells my story.
Well, no, but I just wanted to warn you that we've already heard the squawking, so now you've really got... No. We've waited a full week to have you do it, you know.
But he tells my story better than I tell
which
is very frustrating.
No, come on.
Very frustrating.
All right, so tell us.
Well, I decided that, you know, perhaps in moments of rapture or transport or joy, that he just goes... No, he squawks. And I just threw a couple of squawks in, you know, thinking, what the hell? Yeah, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Okay, so tell me your line with the squawk.
It was something about Chinese food. I had something along the lines of, have you ever tried the Chinese food, Captain? It's delicious.
Oh, my God.
I don't remember. But, you know, I mean, it was a little subtler than that. It was smaller squawks. But, you know, it was just sort of, I thought, well... And then the other thing was Phlox's voice has evolved a little bit, but he had a little bit more of a Hindu lilt at first. I kind of began to ease that out a bit once I got the job. But anyway, so they call, they say, you know, basically you're our guy, yada yada. I go in, I do the squawk again, I get the job, we have a big table read before we're going to shoot. And I said, so, by the way, before I get to the end of the story, can I swear in this?
Please do, in fact.
So I get to the table read, and I kind of read, and nobody said anything one way or the other about the squawk. So I squawk. I'm a little less committed to the squawk, but I squawk. And then I ask Brandon and Rick afterwards, so, you know, did you hire me because of the squawk, in spite of the squawk? What's the deal with the squawk? And they kind of went, yeah, pretty much. They kind of went, yeah.
That's kind of how they talk, though.
Yeah, that's kind of how they talk.
But
you know those guys.
They kind of,
yeah. It's sort of noncommittal,
of course it is.
Wasn't really sure whether or not. So when I show up for work, am I squawking? Am I not squawking?
Right.
Couldn't get an answer. Show up for work, first scene, first day. The director, who is a nice guy, but has something of an austere persona. I run the scene, and blah, 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 blah. And I hear, cut! And Jim comes up and says, so what are you fucking around for?
Ooh.
And that sort of told me that the squawk had been cut.
You were the last to know.
I was the last to know. And for all I know,
we're always the last
it was Jim's decision, you know? I don't know that Jim had ever actually been and I just didn't feel like kind of getting into the whole, well, you know, Jim, here's the story.
Right.
See, I don't know whether I should.
And you didn't want to get into that.
I didn't want to get into
about the squawking.
So that's how the squawk died.
I see.
Yeah.
Did you miss the squawk?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, you know, but no, in retrospect, probably 7 years of squawking wouldn't have been so much fun.
Yeah, I think we were fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
But you had some wonderful, fun character things and wonderful moments.
I had a giant
moments.
Smile. My head blows up like a pufferfish.
Yeah.
I've got a tongue that goes down to my ankles.
And we like that.
I have three wives, which leads me to believe I have three penises.
Okay.
That was never explored.
Never.
In fact, I was the only character on the show that didn't get laid in 4 years.
I'm so sorry.
I didn't get laid. Even Dominic got laid, for God's sake.
Even off camera? Or?
No, off camera. I'm there very happily married.
I didn't mean that to you, John. I meant Flox.
Oh,
you think there's
no life off camera.
Off
no,
camera,
I just take the head off and go home off camera.
Nothing.
No, well, all the Mrs. Floxes are, you know, back on Denobula.
That's true.
And,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I thought maybe Hoshi and I were going to get together at one point, but that never went anywhere.
That could be kind of the way they do it. Yeah.
And then at one point they brought a wife of mine on, but she spent the whole episode hitting on Trip.
Yeah.
Which I encouraged.
Which you encouraged.
Which
well,
I encouraged.
Connor's a popular guy.
Yeah, well, I thought that was a little, classless. I mean,
I
like the producers just fine. Very nice guys. They've been very kind to me. But
you're right.
They give me a love interest, and then they have her hit on some other guy.
That's kind of tacky.
They want to just glue a horn to my head, for God's sake.
That is really tacky. Come to think of it.
Well.
Anybody who's got comments or questions for that for John Billingsley, please.
Show's over now. I can speak freely.
Here. Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Nothing to lose.
Yeah, if you're listening, Rick and Brandon, I apologize.
What are they going to do? Fire you?
Sorry. What are they going to do? Fire me?
Please.
Exactly.
Tell me about. Well, I'm sure that wasn't your favorite episode. Tell me your favorite episode.
I did like that episode. I mean, I'm kind of making fun, but I actually did kind of like that episode.
What was the name of that?
What was the name of that? I don't know. Aren't they all called pretty much the same thing? You know, brute force, strike zone.
Exactly.
It
sounds like a. Well,
yeah,
saying, like a UPS
Terra
show.
Prima.
Yeah,
I don't know. They all sound the same. They all blur. I don't remember what it was.
Right. Like Enterprise Factor.
Doctor's Horny Wife, I think. Was that what it was called?
Something like that. Extreme Enterprise.
Yeah.
All right, so...
My favorite episode, probably for me, was the first episode that I was really featured in, which was Doctor's Orders, which was back in season one, and it was a moral dilemma, and I had a chance to actually, you know, stand and speak my piece to the captain, and we got to know a little bit about him. And it was during the shooting of that episode that I also won the first Halloween contest.
Oh.
Which, did Dominic tell you that?
No, he didn't. You have some stories left.
Go ahead. I won first prize. I was Phlox in Bondage.
Phlox in Bondage for the Halloween?
For the Halloween. Every year at Halloween, the cast and crew would have Halloween.
Oh, this is news to me. I did not know.
You didn't do that in your time?
No, we didn't, actually.
Yeah, maybe that started in Voyager. I don't know.
I think probably.
And prizes were given out for best costume. The focus puller was the dominatrix, and I was the passive. I was on a long dog leash, and I had a little red rubber ball and black leather panties and, you know, all that thing. And I sort of scuffled around, got in the captain's chair. She beat me with the riding crop. But I had my Phlox head on because I'd been shooting that day. Anyway, I won first prize. First thing I've ever won in my life.
I'm just letting you go there, John.
The only thing I've won in my whole life.
That is so
and there's some wonderful pictures
beautiful.
That I'm saving for my retirement fund.
I bet.
I don't want to sell them until it's, you know.
Oh, you know what? Well.
Oh, yeah. No. Actually, I think Bonnie might have burned them. I'm not sure. I haven't found them in a while.
Now, Bonnie, of course, was not on the other end of that leash.
No. But Bonnie, I did come home and say, Bonnie, I have some pictures I want to show you. I won first prize, baby. Like that old joke about the Scotsman, you know.
This is at work, of course.
This
during
is at
the
work.
Day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
During the day.
All right, got it.
Brandon and Rick were the judges.
Of course.
They come in, they judge.
Well, now I know why you won first place, for God's sake. Never mind.
It was a universal acclamation,
okay.
I have to say.
No, I'm sure it was. No. So tell me about the energy on the set and who you had a lot of fun with, and tell me about your feelings. I mean, certainly Dominic is...
What has he said?
Well,
has he trashed me? Did
no.
he come in and has he
no,
trashed
No, actually, Dominic and Anthony were a lot of fun last week. We had a good time with them. And, you know, they speak really glowingly, of course. I mean, no one's had any real dirt on anything so far. So if you'd like, you know,
oh,
you
man.
Can win first place in that,
oh,
too.
Oh, I could be the one to
you
dish
could,
the dirt.
In fact, if you'd like.
Boy, don't tempt me.
Come on.
Actually, it is a really, really nice group of folks. I mean, I'm going to miss that more than anything.
Yeah.
And I guess that's, you know, what everybody says. It's a cliche because very few people are going to say, boy, I can't wait to get out of this piece of shit. I hated those people. Sometimes you kind of wish somebody would say that just for the hell of it, but I'm not going to be that guy. It was a very, very nice group of people.
I think people on other shows have said that.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Really? That publicly? With that much?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Man.
But you will do a few conventions, and then you'll find out who really liked who.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
No, we all liked each other. I mean,
No, that's what I heard that
you
did. Yeah.
My favorite, probably, thing was whenever Dominic had to wear the spacesuit. The spacesuits are extraordinarily uncomfortable.
Right.
And they weigh, I don't know, it seems like they weigh 70 or 80 pounds. I don't know how much they weigh. And they've got these very painful helmets and then a back plate that sort of is the power mechanism, and it kind of pulls your spine. And and for some reason, I think it's just because everybody sort of likes to see Dominic get upset because he can really rip off some expletives when he gets going.
The British are good at that.
The British are really good
really
at that.
Good. They have
really
some good new ones that we don't even know yet.
They do, and they use them in interesting combinations,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they've got a lot of sort of vocal variety,
yeah.
So there's a whole lot of pitch change.
Yeah, it's very good. As an actor, it's fun to
hear. It's fun to watch,
yeah.
And it doesn't take much to get Dom going.
Right.
So whenever he had to wear the spacesuit, I'd try and see if I could find an excuse to stop by the set just to see if, you know,
right.
If I could catch him in full...
in full regalia?
Yeah, in full bloom.
How long does it take to put that on?
The spacesuit?
Yeah.
Oh, pity the poor costume people, because, of course, they're the ones who actually have to kind of shoehorn us into it. The body of the suit is not that difficult to put on, but then they've got to put the gloves on, they've got to put the back plate on, and it's kind of attached to a harness, so they've got to put the helmet on and fasten you in. And it takes probably 10 minutes, and every time you cut, unless you're going again right away, they got to take you out of it again because it's extraordinarily uncomfortable.
Right.
So they usually have a full complement of people assisting
on
those days. And then you can see this sort of like, you know, black look kind of cross over the wardrobe people's face when we've got one of these shows coming up.
The black look.
The black look. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, yeah.
Okay. The black look. So that seems like it must have been an ordeal. Certainly no time to go to the potty.
No, it's a pain in the ass to go to the potty.
Yes, definitely.
Pain in the ass to go to the potty.
Okay, so speaking of time, in a couple minutes we're going to have Michael Westmore on. So I'd like to ask all you guys out there to please get your questions ready and write them in to John Billingsley and to Michael Westmore. Michael, as you know, is a multi Emmy-winning makeup designer for...
Between us, Michael and I have, gosh, a lot of Emmys.
How many do you think you have and he has?
I know, that was really cruel. Chase, you don't have
Why
a reputation as being
so
cruel.
I completely able to do that to you, though. I'm sorry.
I don't know, it's because I kind of invited it.
You did.
Yeah, Michael has a lot.
Michael
has a lot. I have...
Should we just say that?
Less than a lot.
You have a lot.
Michael has a lot.
Yeah, I think he does.
Now, I do have a bowling trophy.
A bowling trophy?
Yep. Highest average, 190.
Really?
Over the arc of a whole season. Do I need to put those headphones on?
Put the headphones on. I just want to make sure that they are indeed working. You have a bowling trophy.
I have a bowling trophy. I won it in the seventh grade.
Okay.
For highest average. And I had a very high average for seventh grade, 190. That's pretty good.
That is not bad.
That's not bad. I was a very good bowler in the seventh grade.
Wow. I golf 190. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
That's pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah.
That would take like a day and a half to finish nine holes.
Well, whatever. You
take
know?
A tent
it's
and like
about
a meal.
Winning.
It's not with you, it's not. It's just about getting home with
all
you.
Right.
It's like, so Chase, you didn't want to. I didn't.
Okay.
Oh.
listen, we're going to get, hey, Rob, I just want to make sure that everything's okay technically with Michael Westmore.
Yes.
We've got a couple questions for John, and let me know when you've got Michael on, okay? John, Daniel of Imagination Island says, Mr. Billingsley, how did you feel about your cameo as yourself on Roswell alongside Jonathan Frakes?
Now, do you live on Imagination Island, Daniel? Where is Imagination Island? Is that like that Michael Jackson place? Is that like
really?
Yeah.
Do they let you out ever?
The kids, get off of Imagination Island!
Right.
Daniel,
now
put down
stop it.
The wine glass.
Enough,
all right.
John.
Let's see. Yes, I had a brief cameo as myself on Roswell. It actually was only a couple of days after 9/11, and I, as of course everybody in the world, was in a just a dreadful mood, and I really didn't want to do anything, and they kind of insisted, so I went, and I actually had a lovely time. It really lifted my spirits. Jonathan Frakes is such a nice man.
He is so great.
Such a nice man.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Friendly and warm.
Yeah.
And, everybody I met, actually.
Was it fun working with Jonathan then? And of course, now you've...
Yeah,
it
was great, and we just had a scene the other day. I don't really have a ton to do in this final episode, but I certainly have had a chance to kind of speak to him a bit in passing, and just a lovely guy.
Hmm.
Yeah, Marina's lovely, too. Everybody, it's been a real treat meeting all the various folks over the years, down over the years.
Yeah.
I did get the Shatner wave-off, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, really? No, tell me about the wave-off.
The wave-off, we were on a plane ride together. We were going up to a convention. He didn't know me from Adam, and I didn't want to bother him.
He doesn't watch the show weekly?
Apparently not. Because
under the makeup face?
He doesn't watch the show, apparently, because we got off.
Bill's busy, though.
He's got a busy life, I'm sure. He's a very nice guy. I wouldn't tell the story if it wasn't basically meant with warmth.
Right.
But he was on the phone, and he was obviously calling the driver who wasn't there, and I was walking over to say, Bill, I think we're probably waiting for the same driver. And he was kind of doing the Shatner wave-off whenever anybody was coming up to ask for an autograph. And, he was busy. I just did that. But I walked up, and I got the Shatner wave-off. And I said, I'm on fucking Star Trek. I am on Star Trek, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And I said it just like that. I perhaps didn't say motherfucker.
Michael,
yes.
Okay, everybody, we have got Ron. Michael, are you there?
I am.
Hey, oh my gosh. Okay, this is so exciting. Everybody, we have got Michael Westmore on the line. Welcome, Michael. Thanks so much for joining us at the fandom.
Thank you.
How you doing?
We're doing excellent.
Good, good. Well, we're really, really happy to have you join us. And as I mentioned earlier, we've got John Billingsley here.
Hi, John.
Hi, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
We were just talking about all the Emmys you and I have won together.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're gonna be here tomorrow. Last time getting into your face.
Last head.
Yeah.
Last time.
One more head.
I always have to go to the thing and see if I've got extra ones for Brad to paint, so tomorrow the last one leaves the block.
Yep.
That's it, huh?
Yeah.
How are you feeling about that, Michael? What is this like? You've been on Star Trek now for how many years in a
18.
Row? 18. 18 solid years.
18 years.
My gosh.
But the only problem is when I think of the 18 years, which seems like a long time, and it is a long time, I've actually been credited in the business. I've been here for 45 years, so Star Trek has only been... about 40% of the career I've had.
Right, less than half.
But it seems like it's been the majority.
Well, I imagine, and when you take it even back even further with the life you've had just with your family legacy of being in makeup ever since, really, since you were born, basically, right?
That goes way back. Oh, yeah. I used to go to the Warner Brothers. My mother was a hairstylist.
Right.
And she worked at Warner Brothers, and then she worked for MCA. And I would go to work with her because the studios worked 6 days a week then. So
right.
I would go to work and play at the studio on Saturdays, and then usually they would wrap about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So it was a lot different business than it is now.
Wow.
Now they just kill you in 5 days.
In 5 days,
in
right.
In 5 days.
5 20-hour days.
As John knows when he's been here at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Indeed.
I'm sure. Is that about what time you guys started with your makeup, John?
On Mondays, if I was first up, I would have to get there sometimes as early as 4:15 or 4:30, but that was the worst it would be, and frequently I wasn't working on Monday. So.
And Michael, with your history, and I've got so many other probably more important questions, but we'll just go in this vein now. With your history, what kind of days, because you've done the design and you've done the supervision and you've done, the hands-on work certainly with so many of these and teaching the other artists how to do it. What kind of days have you been used to working for these 18 years?
Well, when it started off, at that time there was only two of us, and I was doing the lab work. The other person was staying on the set. And I had many a week where I worked 80 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and out of those that time, there was three times they literally had to take me home.
Oh,
where
gosh.
I could not drive. I was a basket case.
I bet.
As the show developed, I was able to get more help. And I still did a lot of hands-on. I did a lot of hands-on up until Enterprise started. Because I still did Kate McGrew, and I did the Chakotay, and hand-painted his tattoo every day. And
right.
over on Deep Space with you, I was spotting Terry's face for all those years.
I remember.
And then when I came into Enterprise, they told me, we don't want you to even put a setup in the makeup trailer, that all we want you to do is go and design things. We're going to put the screws to you.
Wow.
And it was a whole different thing, where before I used to read the script and talk things over with Rick and go right to work with the sculpture and say, here's our alien of the day. And when Enterprise started, I literally had to start doing sketches. They wanted to see drawings, and it wasn't one. If there was something they liked, it was like, go do 10 variations on this. John with Phlox, I have a book that has 75 variations of his makeup in it.
Were any of them, did any of them make me look like a bird by any chance?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look through them. But it was like we kept doing more and more and more, to the point where I said, you know, for what we've got here, I don't have another design in my head at this point.
Wow.
After 75 of them.
I bet. I mean, well, knowing you, you probably would, but let's not make you go there, right?
Yeah.
And what is the process like? Would you do a sketch and then show it to Rick?
Yes. A pencil sketch with a concept, and then I would come back, and if they had hired the actor, I could get a plaster cast off his face and then custom make the appliance for the face. Many times, we just they don't hire him in time, or somebody's in New York, and we just go ahead and start sculpting from the designs that were selected.
Wow.
And hope and pray that the actor, that their actress that they select, is going to be close. Of course, with everything being rubber, it's all stretchable, and a lot of times we've made something multi-piece, so it's not one full face. We can put a forehead on and adjust the nose to it. And work it out.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Wow.
It's a very interesting and different creative process on Enterprise than it had been on the previous shows.
And it just kind of went as the creative process was step by step and back and forth more than it usually was?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow. I guess my main question that I want to ask you, and I don't know if you've been asked this a lot, but what would your favorite makeup be? It's like, I'm sure asking what's your favorite child, but...
Yeah, over all the
tell
years...
tell you that, what's his favorite child.
Yeah, which one's my favorite child?
It's very clear which his favorite child is.
We like Mackenzie.
Yeah.
We like her.
Tell you.
Okay, no, but I mean, I'm sure you have many, but tell me your feelings on that.
There's so many of them. I mean, recently, I think one of the really cool ones was the Zindi Lizards on the third season of Enterprise. It's it was exciting to put those together. And then when you saw... a group of them together, but my all-time favorite makeup was one that was back on Next Generation in a show called Offspring.
Okay.
And it was the story of a little android that wanted to be a human female, and Data transforms the android into a human female. But I had all kinds of appliances and pieces and mechanical things that went with it, and the man, his name was Leonard Crowfoot. He was a ballet dancer, and Leonard could literally stand on one foot and not move and hold on to a mechanical leg on the other, so it looked like we were unscrewing his leg or something.
Oh, that's so brilliant, right?
And he had, to make him look like an android, we had appliances that covered his chest, his entire head, and a giant diaper, and we had to glue him into this thing every day. And then it took 2 hours to get him out, and two of us to scrub him down in the shower down the gym here, which I'm sure they loved with all this rubber and goo going down the sink.
Right.
And he was all painted a pinky bronze. The real challenge of this thing was, and surprisingly enough, he agreed to all of it, is there was no nose. He had to breathe through his mouth, but the mouth wasn't lined up with his mouth. It was a little lower than his mouth. Had no ears, so he had muffled hearing, and he could not go to the bathroom because he was totally glued into this rubber diaper.
Right.
So,
my gosh. And how long was the day for him there?
well, it was a 4-hour makeup and then a 14-hour day.
Wow.
And then coming out.
Oh, my gosh.
He didn't drink or eat the entire time.
I bet,
yeah. Oh, and then he had silverized contact lenses on top of it,
and
so he didn't see well.
My gosh.
Let's have him recur.
I know.
Exactly.
How else could I torture somebody?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And he was probably just real glad to be able to do it.
Yeah, he was. He was thrilled. He had a lot of fun with it. But, I mean, he had to restrict himself as far as liquids and food and everything else while we were doing it.
My gosh.
Star Trek guest star diet.
Yeah.
Really. And were you there, John? I mean, I'm sorry. Were you there, Michael, beginning to end of this from
yes.
the time he started till the scrub down?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I did a lot of hands-on.
You wasn't there during the scrub down.
Really? Huh?
No, you know something? I wasn't, but I did borrow my wife's loofah sponge.
yeah.
It was the only thing
you
we could
Bill
find.
You and Bill O'Reilly.
Together.
Come on, Michael.
Really?
We don't want to go there.
No, Doug Drexler, who's one of our art designers on the show now, was a makeup artist then.
Right.
And I sent Doug down to the shower with a loofah sponge.
Uh-huh.
And a gallon of alcohol.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. But what a... that's just such a brilliant idea, you know,
well,
to have done that.
But you also had to have somebody that was really, would go that far to do it. Because
right.
we could have stopped. Had production said, you know, we'll put a loincloth on him or something. But he looked like a little Oscar,
right.
you know, or one of these little dolls you see in the store that was, you know, no organs at all. It was just all like a Barbie doll.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that episode again.
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of us will. That's so great. Now, that was a 4-hour makeup, you said.
Yes.
What is your longest makeup? Because I know that there have been rumors of 6-hour makeups.
Yes.
And tell me about some of those. Was that Alice?
That was LeVar Burton.
Oh, really?
When he played a lizard.
Okay.
Again, we made a diaper for him.
Uh-huh.
He still wears them.
Little veins glued all over his body. He had webbed hands, he had webbed feet, and a whole head because he was transformed into a lizard. And not only was it 6 hours to put him into it, there were 6 makeup artists gluing.
Oh, my gosh.
So, well, then LeVar said, I'm only doing this once, guys, so you're going to get it all today. And it was a long time in and a long time coming out. It was he was all painted with little blue veins that actually glowed. It was done under black light.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I think Mark and Brian were the two background characters because they did their radio show from the lab where we were making everybody up, the three of them.
Really?
And so we were literally talking on the radio while we were applying their makeup.
That's so brilliant.
Yeah.
In the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And what episode was that?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember the name
That's
of it.
Okay. I'm sure
yeah.
somebody out there, one of the fans?
There'll be about 85 of them. They're going to know the answer to that.
Oh, definitely.
That's all I have to do at a convention is I mention an alien and say, I can't remember the names. Anybody know it? And
right.
You get a dozen hands shoot up in the air.
Oh, I'll have it for you in a minute, I'm sure. So not only, of course, obviously, have you done Star Trek's and such amazing excellence for 18 years now, but some of the other credits that you have are just so brilliant. I mean, having done the design on Raging Bull
mm-hmm.
and Rocky, and tell me about some of your other, I don't mean to ask such broad questions, but I mean, I just want to hear you talk. Tell me some career highlights and what you look back on and just, so far anyway, look back on and really just cherish as a memory.
Well, you know, it's interesting because somebody drew up, or pulled up my bio from the internet.
And we're looking at it now, Michael, even as we speak.
There's things that I did that I don't even remember doing.
I bet.
I have the names I don't even remember.
I bet.
Well, on projects.
63 film credits.
Is it really?
63 film and television, actually.
Plan of the Cave Bear.
No, I spent a lot of time in Canada with Daryl Hannah on that, and it was a lot of fun. Daryl and I are
bastard.
Still good friends today.
She's a lovely one to do makeup on, actually. I'm sure. But I mean, this is just, it's brilliant stuff. I mean, tell me some of your favorite, favorite makeups that you've done off Trek.
Raging Bull on Star Trek?
Off Trek.
Raging Bull was, I think, I was on it for 14 months.
Okay.
And they basically put me under contract and told me to sit home and wait for De Niro to call me. Of which, when you're working with Marty and Robert, you get a lot of calls. So it wasn't like I was able to sit home and plant flowers. We did makeup tests continually
wow.
on it. Try another nose, try another. It finally got down to the point where the last makeup test we did on them, they for some reason, some strange reason, I took the nose and I put it in my pocket. And Bob Chardoff said, well, I like the makeup, and I think we should go with this, but I think we should take a little bit more off the nose. And I held it up to the light, and right on the tip of the nose, there was no nose there. It was easy. Fine, let's shoot.
There was no nose there?
No, I mean, it was so thin across the very tip of his nose. It was broad.
Oh, right.
But it wasn't sticking out, you know, Pinocchio type. It was right down to the surface of Robert's own nose.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and the Rocky films. I enjoyed all those with working with a Stallone. First Blood was a really enjoyable film to work on. And whenever there's creativity, and, of course, a lot of the work that I've done in those films in the past are done optically now. You don't do them practical anymore.
Right.
Down to the point of Stallone sewing up his arm on First Blood, I had a tube that was used for feeding, intravenous feeding for babies, that I had running through a little teeny appliance on his arm.
Oh,
but
really?
And it could all be done optically now. Here's the two of us freezing to death in the stream bed, and one little teeny grain of sand got into the tube and plugged it up, and Sly actually worked it out. Both our hands were freezing. And it was a long shot where the camera had to zoom in, and things like this now, as I said, would be done optically.
Right.
Even here on Star Trek, when we first started, there was so many things that we were doing practically, which eventually have become opticals. And
I'm totally optical now. I haven't showed up to work in 2 years.
That's right.
It's
been
great.
Yeah, come in, do voiceover, and go home.
Yeah.
It's so much easier that way, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Just a matter of time. Pretty soon they won't need us at all.
Yeah, I beg to differ.
It's a very good, very good career move for you, Chase, I tell you, because none of us are going to be on TV anymore, that's for sure.
It's the vocals.
It's all going to be optical.
No.
I think so many people are afraid of that, but I don't think they can ever get rid of, you know, there's got to be somebody to be able to put in Star in the Enquirer.
Oh, absolutely.
So you can't put animated characters in there.
If only for the Enquirer's sake. Michael, we've got some questions from the audience, if that's okay with
okay.
you. Okay. Daniel of Imagination Island has a bunch. He says, Mr. Westmore, are you responsible for the updated look of the Borg? How do you feel about the Borg Queen's bodysuit? Also, what was the idea behind her, the creator of the Borg, a leader or a representative? I guess just tell us.
Whoa.
Tell us,
My mind doesn't go that.
Right.
Yes, I was the one involved with that. When we started with the Borg, I'm in charge of the head and the hands, and Dorinda was in charge of the body, and then it went into Val Blackman's hands after that.
Okay.
So all the things that have gone on with the head on them, we've played with in the lab and actually had fun with. It's a very creative process. My son designed all the eyes, the electronic eyes that went on it, and they actually blink out Morse code messages.
Oh, really?
Every eye, every eye. Michael got bored just making random blinking things, so he figured if he worked out Morse code and put somebody's name in there, or the last one he did was Bonnie, which was his dog.
Okay.
Bonnie. I would say with Alice, she was the leader. She was the leader of that particular cell, that particular cube. You know, she was the queen bee. That's why her head was a little different. And if you look real careful in First Contact, you will even see little lights that are blinking in her head. And it isn't a cast from someplace else. We actually mounted these little teeny lights underneath the skin.
Really?
Yeah, on her head.
Wow, I thought that was done from outside or something.
Yeah, you might think it's a glow from something else.
Right.
And it isn't. It's from the inside.
Oh, but that was brilliant. That's definitely one of my favorite makeups ever that I've ever
seen. Oh, I do too. I think First Contact's my favorite show.
Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah, mine too.
Both the plots, A and B, keep you going back and forth the whole time.
I thought it was absolutely riveting.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was there another board question there?
Let's see, there's a couple others.
Daniel's Imagination Island now has like 12 questions in
front
of us.
He does. He's going strong here. He says, Michael Westmore, what was your inspiration on the midget aliens for the movie Insurrection? They were really bizarre and quite enjoyable and totally unique.
I don't remember, except I know we were going to make the earlobes a little longer and stick out, just since they were so short, that to give them a little bit of width to the makeup design.
Right.
It's a while ago, and it's funny because I can see that I actually have about two or three of those heads that are left up on the shelf.
Right. Hey, there's lots more questions here.
We've got, go ahead.
Did you do the makeup for Data's child in The Offspring? I must say that is very talented work.
Data's child, you mean the girl? The head?
Not being as familiar with
don't look
episode,
at me.
I know.
Well, Data's child, yeah, it was a girl. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
Is the answer. That's Leonard Crowfoot, the makeup we were talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then here's another, I think we mentioned the Zindi reptilians.
Uh-huh.
Did you do the lead Dalam's makeup? The Zindi reptilians. After 18 years, I can't imagine.
Our head lizard, is that?
I think so. Delete Dalam.
I don't know what that means either.
We'll go on
to another question.
The thing is I designed it and I worked on all the colorings on the head. I myself don't have time to sit and apply anymore because I have to keep moving literally from chair to chair. Surprisingly enough, somebody can do the same makeup for 10 times in a row. And the 11th time they do it, they'll start to make a change or something. So I never can totally relax.
Interesting.
With John's makeup, but Brad Look does his, and Brad's a person I could go to Tahiti, and I know when I came back, it's still going to look the same because he has that type of a rote being able to do the makeup like that.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I hear
you. Identity Crisis. Thank you, Stevie, NX01. Identity Crisis was the name of the episode.
That's okay.
What we're looking for.
There we go.
With LeVar.
Yes.
You're right.
There you go. Here's one. I noticed that Worf's ridges underwent a major change for TNG's second season, but remained consistent from there on out.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about that.
I...
This is from Daniel of Imagination Island, by the way.
Again.
He's the only person who apparently listens to the show. I'm sort of stunned.
We've got a couple others, though. I'll get to them.
With Worf, after the first season, I just felt his head looked a little too busy. So I went into Rick Berman, and I asked him if I could make a few little just subtle changes. And he said, yeah, sure, go ahead. So what you see is the few little subtle changes that I went and did. And, then, of course, everybody liked it, but
right.
It was like subtle changes, you know. And then it did stay the same the rest of the season.
Okay.
Even up through into Deep Space and the movies.
Right. I knew that. Okay, here's another, and then we've got some that are from not Star Trek, but from other shows. If the Borg returned in an Endgame story with a new hierarchy, would you take that opportunity to give the Borg yet a new updated look?
You know, and when you say an updated look, we're pretty much locked into our style as far as the bald look and the mechanics that are attached. But what we had fun doing was to design new things into the mechanics, to put lights into them, to run possible chains between different areas and do just really... There's never been two Borgs exactly alike.
Mm.
It's like fingerprints. Because every time one is done and I throw a bunch of pieces to an individual... They will create their own little masterpiece under themselves there, wherever the warps in the skin are, where a piece of metal is attached to the head. So I can't tell you how many we've done. It's been so many, but there never ever has been two alike.
Wow. Well, I will have to watch. I just feel like watching all of these episodes that you've mentioned again, and I'm sure we will because
mm-hmm.
it's really interesting to hear from your point of view all of these things that are you know subtle but important.
Mm-hmm.
Wes says, how difficult was it for you to make Diamond Farnsworth look like Stallone in the First Blood movies? We talked a little bit about that. He says, was it all camera shots or makeup?
No, it was actually, there's no makeup at all. Diamond was just had his own face. That was all. It's all done with, you know, you put the costume on, and that's half the battle, and especially with the hair. What you'll find with Diamond is you never ever see his face unless it's a real flash going by.
Right.
And Diamond got hurt, too. There's the scene where he jumps off a ledge onto a tree and slides down the tree, and he really did. He cracked his ribs, and I saw Diamond this year. He came by and visited.
Hmm.
And these stuntmen that do these things, they really get hurt. In fact, Stallone had to drop out of one branch and just hit the bottom one, and he smacked a rib doing that. It's of course, you always hold your breath And it's like a funny thing happened on that. He hurt his rib, and at that same time, I had this cut on his arm with blood flowing down his arm, and they ran him over to a little hospital because they wanted to wrap his chest because of it. And the doctor kept wanting to treat the wound, the fake wound on the side of his arm, before he looked at his chest. And I had to convince him that this, it wasn't. That's not real, doc. You know, my
oh
chest.
Oh my gosh.
Is. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a story. Wow. Okay, there's so many questions here, Michael. I'm just going to fire a couple more at you, if that's okay.
Okay.
We've got like just like another couple minutes, and then I want to get back to John yet. Let me ask you about rumors of a new Trek movie. Do you know anything that you can tell us? Is there something that you may be working on next, or what would your next projects be?
I actually don't have a next project now. I have heard rumor to possibly another movie, and I would be very interested in being involved in it. But at this point, if there is such a thing, it's in a planning stage where my involvement doesn't come in yet. Because there's, as far as I know, there's no script.
Right.
And that's the stage it would be in right now. It would be a writing stage.
Right.
Because Herman's not building sets. I mean, all of us that are in these different departments know what each other's doing.
Right.
And there's nothing else going on outside of probably the stage with Rick Berman and the writers.
Right. Okay. Well... Gosh, if you hear anything, let us know at the fandom.
Yeah, if you hear anything, give me a call. Let
yeah,
me know.
We'll let you know anything we hear.
Yeah.
I have one more question that I want to ask, okay? This is, that seemed like a kind of a wrap-up question, but I want to ask this for Fina. The more I watch DS9, the more I appreciate the Cardassian makeup, especially those neck ridges. What was the inspiration for that?
When, the whole makeup, which is interesting, Marion and my wife and I were going to dinner in a Thai restaurant in Studio City. Next to the restaurant was a painting of a woman with a spoon in the middle of her head. And I looked at this thing, and I said to Marion, I said, someday I'm going to do an alien with a spoon in their head. And this was years before the Cardassian makeup ever came up.
Wow.
So when it did come up, Mark Alimo, who they had cast for the part, had a real long neck, had a whole head cast and neck and shoulders on with what I
right.
took from him.
Definitely.
And I had the head designed and put the spoon into the head and tied the ears into it and the chin and the tip of the nose. And then you're looking at this and you're going, gosh, Mark's got such a long neck and these are such supposedly nasty gray characters that we talk, gray brownish characters we talked about. And they have scales for skin. I thought how neat it would be if we could do a little something on the neck, and that's how it evolved.
Wow.
It's because Mark had a shorter neck or something, it may never have happened.
So in a lot of your makeups, you've taken what you have with the person and then gone off of that.
Yes.
And your own. That's so lovely.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say is, especially, I mean, after seeing your work for so long and talking to you now, I'm just ever more intrigued, and we're looking forward to seeing more of it. So, you know, for season 6 or the next film or Star Trek 11 or whatever it is, I mean, we're looking forward to seeing more of your stuff.
I'm hoping to write a book one of these days, too.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah.
Hey, let us know if you would, or I'll keep in touch, and we'd be happy to publicize it for you because
wonderful.
I know these people would love it. Michael, do you have any closing words, just anything in closing that you'd like to say to the fans, any feelings about Trek or the world or anything else that you'd like to share?
Well, I tell you, Enterprise, especially this season, last season, they're really wonderful. I think everybody's worked very hard. The actors have. The scripts have been great. Manny Coto's done a nice job, mm-hmm. and Rick and Brandon, and it's a shame that it's going off the air because I think it's reaching a peak now where had we ever started earlier on with the shows and the things we're doing now, there would be a large fan base following this.
Right.
They're really, really enjoyable. I mean, I sit down and I screen dailies, and I enjoy watching the dailies every day. There's always new surprises, you know, with Dan Curry and the opticals.
Yeah.
I've been coming up with some really, which I love, some of the alien designs and colors and things that we haven't done in the past. So it's going to be a lot of eye candy and a lot of fun for the viewers to watch the last season of Enterprise. And then hopefully in the not-too-distant future, you know, Paramount will decide to resurrect it, and we'll be back doing it again.
Absolutely. Well, we're certainly hoping that, and looking more forward than ever to more of your gorgeous work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Michael. It really means a lot.
Thank you.
Bye, Michael.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Westmore, yes. Thank you so much, Michael.
Tell John I don't think he has too early of a call.
Yay, I should be last up.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Take care.
Great stuff, Michael. Thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was multi-Emmy Award winner Michael Westmore. Okay, we're getting back to John Billingsley now. We've got a couple.
Emmy Award winner,
so sorry.
John Billingsley.
Hey, hey, you're a guest on the fandom.
I'm a guest on the fandom, but it's 5 o'clock.
No, but we've got a couple more minutes here, okay? We want to know, would you be interested in returning to Enterprise if we succeed in saving the show?
Sure, and no disrespect at all to the fans and their passion and their appreciation for the show. I have to say, in all honesty, I don't think it's a function so much of the network having canceled the show as it is a function of Paramount having decided that they do not want to make this show anymore. I do think Star Trek will return in another incarnation at some point, but I think it's like one of the great principles of horticulture, you know? The ground has to be fallow for a while before you can replant.
So true.
I think the time has come for the franchise to take a break. I wish that we had gotten out of the gate with more of a bang. I do think that the show has really hit its peak, but unfortunately that old bromide, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression, is true. And we sort of lost the opportunity to build on the Star Trek audience, and it is necessary now to build on that audience, to
right.
bring some new folks to the table. This show didn't do that, you know, and you could argue the reasons why it didn't do that. But it didn't do that.
Right.
And I don't really honestly disagree with Paramount's thinking. I am sorry to see it go. I'm sorry to see my relationships end. But if I worked for Paramount, I probably would be inclined to agree with them that it needs to take a little bit of a break and it'll return.
Well, there you go. I mean, spoken honestly, I guess that's all you can say. I want to ask you, are you and the cast are aware of all of the Trek United efforts, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And $3 million, I've heard that they have raised.
And again, I realize that I may be, I don't mean to be throwing water on anybody. I do think it's not a function of the money.
Right.
It's not a question of the fact that Paramount could certainly afford to continue doing the show, and they could
right.
probably find a channel somewhere to pick it up. Their economic argument is essentially based on this. There aren't right now enough fans watching the show for them to have a healthy enough profit.
Right.
Their feeling is, I'm guessing, that if the show goes away, if the franchise goes away for a while, when it returns, people will be hungry for it again. And more than just the people who are watching it now might be curious enough to take a look at it and give it another shot. I'm afraid I don't think even if the fans were able to raise enough money to actually put a whole season on, that it would change Paramount's thinking about this. And I say that only because for my own money, I think the posture at this point should be an appreciation of what has happened and enjoyment of the ride that everybody's had a chance to go on.
Hmm.
And, you know,
that's a good point.
It will come again.
That's a very good point.
All things have an end.
That's a very good point. One more quick question. Tell us about your upcoming projects and anything that you're doing, conventions, other film, television?
I was on a show called Cold Case about a month or two ago, playing a heinous serial killer.
And that aired.
And that aired.
Yeah.
They're going to bring me back because I got away. And
Excellent.
They're going to bring me back, and presumably they're going to either capture me or kill me. I hope I get away so that I can kill again over the arc of the next few seasons.
Hey, that's always nice, isn't it?
Beyond that, I'm doing a signing in London this May, and then...
Excellent. At Expo?
At Expo,
London Expo.
Yeah. And
Brian Coney?
Yeah, Brian Coney. So a bunch of the Enterprise guys are going to be there.
Excellent.
And then my wife and I will do some traveling. We haven't had a vacation in a long time. And then I'll just be, you know, out in the gutter again along with the rest of my castmates.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us.
My
I
pleasure.
Really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And
anytime.
All the best to you. We'll be
Thank
watching
you.
For your murderous
Thank you.
Twins on Cold Case. And,
Thank you.
And, yeah, we're looking forward to seeing Enterprise run ad infinitum.
Well, yeah, me too.
Okay.
Bring on the residual check.
There you go, babe. All right. Thank you so much, John.
My pleasure.
Bye. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for the fandom.com. Stay tuned for Liz Shatner's show with her guest, Robert Burnett. director of the movie Free Enterprise, starring William Shatner, available on williamshatner.com. I can guarantee that's going to be a fun show with Liz and Rob. you're in for a lot of fun there. Featured product available in the Fandom Store, Pirates of the Caribbean, Cursed Coin by Master Replicas for only $12. And next week, March 14th, we'll be back with another guest live here in the studio at thefandom.com. I haven't decided yet. Who would you like?
Al Gore, was he ever on Star
Well,
Trek?
You know, I have actually been wanting to interview him. All right, make the call.
Al?
Be sure to check out our sister site, thefishbowl.com, for all your reality television water cooler talk. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. Be well. I'll see you next week. God bless you.
Bye. Looks like a Kardashian a little bit.